You are listening to the Sports Call podcast presented by Pepsi. Enjoy today's edition of Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show, Pepsi. That's what I like.
Since 1995, Alabama's sports talk leader, Tiger Communications, proudly presents Sports Call. It's time to join our Sports Call crew as they discuss the latest headlines and happenings around Auburn and the entire sports world. To be part of the show, give us a call at 334-887-3401 locally or toll free at 1-888-9-TIGER-9. We're taking phone calls all show long and want to talk about whatever you've got on your mind. And now, coming to you live from the loveliest village on the plains, Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show, Sports Call.
Welcome, Auburn, into the Wednesday edition of Sports Call, live on Tiger 95.9, sportscallauburn.com. I'm Ryan Lavoie. Alongside of me today, Tom Peavy and Javon Cutler, once again filling in for J.J. Jackson today, as once again we will have a shortened show today. 4:15 is when we will get off the air, as Auburn softball is in Atlanta to play the Georgia State Panthers. J.J. Jackson will be on the call of that one. He is traveling to Atlanta as we speak. I believe he has arrived by now, but we will once again have a shortened show, and so there's a lot to get to today. So we won't waste much time at all. We got Ben Golliver on in the Washington Post at 3:30. We'll have your phone calls at 887-341 locally, toll-free 1-888-9-TIGER-9. Also have the birthdays and sports. And if we have time, we will try and reveal our next game on our top 25 greatest games in the last 25 years for Auburn history. And also there is Player of the Week that we have not done yet this week as well. So there's a lot to get into today on the Wednesday edition of Sports Call. Of course, last night, Auburn baseball defeats Georgia Tech. A nice road victory for the Tigers. They needed it. Beating a top 25 Georgia Tech team, they seem to do quite well against Georgia Tech in Atlanta in recent history. And so they get that W. Then Auburn softball defeating Alabama State softball 5-0 here as well. So a good night for the batted ball sports as Auburn baseball propels itself into a series with Alabama this weekend. And Auburn softball, as before mentioned, playing Georgia State tonight. So there's that. And with that, I turn it over. Tom, Javon, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. Good day for the batted sports from the Auburn side. From the Braves side, not so good. Struggling with the Marlins. So I don't know what is going on with that other than the pitching staff is not too good right now. But so, yeah, Braves trying to rebound. But, yeah, it was really, really nice to see Auburn baseball in particular get a win over a ranked Georgia Tech team. I mean, this is a baseball team that is just has been on the absolute struggle bus since that loss to Boston College, the one where they gave up how big of a lead it was. They squandered
eight or nine
run, and you know you kept hoping when that game happened that was just an anomaly. They'll be able to bounce back from it, but they have not. They have struggled mightily ever since that game. Not necessarily that's what did it, but I mean, they have struggled since then. So to get a win over a ranked team on the road, that's good. And so now maybe they can use some of this momentum moving forward and maybe actually pick up a SEC win, a series win, and now you got your arch rivals. You're about to go to Alabama. So what better way to get some momentum than when you're getting ready to face your arch rival?
And Alabama, one of the more beatable teams in the SEC. Yeah. They did have a really good series this past weekend against Texas A&M, but still overall, when you're comparing Alabama to other teams in the league, they're still going to shake out in the bottom half. So if Auburn wants to get real momentum going and try and propel themselves as they're about halfway through the SEC schedule now, this is the weekend to do that, coming off a nice midweek win. They hadn't even played very many midweek games in recent weeks, as we've been pointing out. Had a couple postponed, one due to COVID with Kennesaw State, one due to weather as well. So it was good for them just to play in the midweek for once, and then also played quite well, as you mentioned there. Javon Cutler also on the show today. Javon, how are you doing?
Doing good, Ryan. Doing good. And like we've mentioned, great performances from Auburn baseball and Auburn softball yesterday. And both sports kind of have their backs against the wall. I mean, Auburn softball not as much because they did get the weekend series victory against Texas A&M. But for Auburn baseball, they know that they've got to pretty much win every single game, or if not most of the games, in order to get some type of momentum heading into the SEC tournament. and somehow make a shot at the NCAA tournament. So they were off to a great start against Georgia Tech, and I'm glad they got the win and were able to pull together enough offense. Pitching held its own, so glad that Auburn was able to get the victory in baseball, and softball did their thing against Alabama State. So great job by the Tigers on the diamond yesterday. And also, like Tom mentioned, the Braves. Yeah, we don't know what's wrong with the Braves. I mean, it's kind of confusing the way they're performing right now, because in the past couple of years, the Marlins have kind of been like that punching bag team that the Braves have been able to rely on to beat up pretty well. I mean, they've had around 500 records with pretty much the other NL East opponents, but the Marlins have been that team that the Braves have, it feels like, won at least two out of three or three out of four as far as the series are concerned. So right now the Braves just got to figure some things out, and saw that Max Fried's going to be put on the 10-day IL as well as Christian Pache. So we'll see what the Braves could do as far as having Ender Inciarte now back in the starting lineup, and also having some more pitching in the relief form, because they brought up a Tucker Davidson, who's one of their minor league guys, and he's going to be more in the bullpen. So the Braves are going to have to rely a little bit more on that bullpen, which has not looked that great at all this season. So not the best of starts for the Braves in 2021. But overall, as far as today's show, we have a jam-packed show today. Can't wait to talk to some NBA with Ben Golliver of the Washington Post and get to this player of the week. And like you said, Ryan, if we have time, get to this number nine Auburn win since 1999 or 95, excuse me. So let's get it started.
I wish we could deep dive a little bit more into the Braves. I mean, I know you don't want to do it every single day because it's a 162 game season. Not every game needs to be talked about at length, but certainly there are some inherent problems already that we're noticing with Atlanta. It's 11 games in, and as you said the other day, that, you know, 10 games in, that's the equivalent of one NFL game. Because it's a 16th of the season, and so if you lose your first NFL game, you're not panicking yet. But certainly the Braves are off to a disappointing start. There are some things that they're not doing well that they did last year, such as bullpen, as you talked about. And the lineup seems a little shallower this year. As Adam Duvall pointed out to us last night, in great detail with the Marlins, the Braves' lineup seems to be a little bit thinner. And that's regardless of the fact that Freeman and Azuna and Albies are off to slow starts. Acuna's off to a blistering start to try and compensate from that. But there are some little issues here for Atlanta, 11 games in.
It kind of goes back to one of those things that I've talked about in the last couple of shows when it comes to both Auburn baseball, softball, and now you can say with the Braves, is you don't panic over certain things, but when you start seeing trends, when they're trends that just keep going, then that's where you get concerned. And right now you're starting to see some trends with the Atlanta Braves that you don't like, mainly with that bullpen. You've got some decent starting pitching, even though last night I think it was Fried got rocked.
Yeah.
And then he went into the injured list after the game.
Yeah, because he had been struggling even before last night. But the bullpen has just really struggled. I mean, the bullpen's been bad. So those are the types of trends that you don't like to see, that you want to see better. And then, with the lineup, you've got some guys that are really good that you trust, but then you got some other guys that just aren't hitting the ball very well right now. And they need to get that. They need to get that going, or some moves will have to be made within that lineup. One in particular is Austin Riley. Austin Riley has struggled. I mean, he's got a big bat. We've seen what he can do, but for some reason, he's struggling bad right now. He has absolutely no power in his bat, and it's a dude that we know can hit mammoth shots, and for whatever reason, he's just not getting it done.
And that's the most important thing with him, because we're not asking that Austin Riley, and this is what it was with Duvall last year too, you're not asking him to hit 300. You're not asking him to be a great contact hitter. But with that 240, 250 batting average, you expect 30 home run power. And so far, no home runs for Riley. No really even significantly hard hit balls. I mean, he had a hit last night, but was a kind of a bleeder to the right side where the shift was not. And as you mentioned, the bullpen, you didn't re-sign Shane Green, who had a sub-3 ERA last year. You let Mark Melancon walk to San Diego, who did a good job as the closer, because you figured you'd have Will Smith be effective and being paid a lot of money to be the closer this year. And then Chris Martin, who's your seventh inning guy last year, is already injured right now. And so you've got three of your four most important arms from last year, if not your most important three, since Will Smith was injured part of last year. They're not with the team right now. So, and two of them won't ever be with the team this year. So it is an inauspicious start for Atlanta. For sure, and I'd love to talk more about it, but busy show today, as we mentioned. And with that, let's go ahead and go to the Auburn Bank phone line for the first time today. And retired War Dam Steve joins us. Steve, how are you, my friend?
Well, I appreciate you asking. It's a wet Wednesday down here. How about for you guys up there?
Did you say it was Wednesday down there?
It's
definitely Wednesday up here too, but there's been a little bit of rain, light rain, but nothing too bad.
Yeah, it was raining a little bit when I was coming into the studio, but yeah, I think it's supposed to, tomorrow and Saturday, I think, are the days it's supposed to really start. Tomorrow and Friday are the days it's supposed to really rain.
Yeah, guys, if I get to the point where I'm not sure what day it is, please do not hesitate to correct me.
No problem.
All right, so about the weather, guys, I saw on the Weather Channel here, the 10-day forecast Saturday in Auburn and down here, 80-something percent rain. Do you think that'll have an impact on having the game or rescheduling it?
So I read that that 80% rain is mostly a morning and early afternoon in Auburn, which is, of course, the game is in the early afternoons at 1 o'clock. So it's impossible to say right now. But I think that, you know, I don't think it's going to get completely washed out. It might be something, I don't know how fluid, because we're used to baseball times moving around by a couple hours. I don't know if this is too big of an event to move back a couple hours, but I certainly think that all day is not a washout, so I would be surprised if it got flat out canceled.
Okay, all right. Well, I hope they can still hold it. About games, well, we finally had a baseball team that has a bullpen, is that right?
At least in a one-game situation there, and I saw Peyton Glavin pitch, and I was listening to him pitch as I also watched Tom Glavin on TV last night for the Braves. So a little Glavin family fun last night, but it was good to pick up a win in the midweek, and then to do it against a top 25 team in Georgia Tech. Very positive game for Auburn. Obviously, we know it's one game. It does not mean the whole season has been turned around, but it's a good start.
Well, give me this, guys, because I haven't done the math. What kind of math would have to happen right now for our team to make it not only to the NCAA, but to make it just to the SEC championship tournament? Is it still the top 12 teams, or is it everybody gets to go now?
I'm not sure on that. I have to double check if it's still 12 or if it's all 14. I will tell you this. I can tell you what the standings say right now. And Auburn is last in the SEC. They're 1-11 in SEC play. The next worst teams are LSU and Texas A&M. LSU a bit surprising there, but LSU and A&M, they are 3-9. And I believe Auburn has yet to play either one of those, but will play them both. So Auburn has plenty of opportunities to get into that top 12. Also, Missouri, they play in the last series of the season. Missouri is 4-8. As far as the NCAA tournament math, Auburn standing at 13-16 overall. Look, they've got to get above 500 overall because they're simply going to have such a bad conference record that even getting just a game or two above 500 might not be enough. So I don't know. They play 30 conference games. They've played 12 so far. I don't know. Quick math in my head. If they got to, 11-19, 12-18, and that was a 10 or 11 out of the last 18 conference games, coupled with midweek wins, that would get them, 5, 6, 7 over 500 overall, and it get them to, like I said, 11-19, 12-18 in the SEC. The bottom line is, though, that's going to be difficult to accomplish because this is a 1-11 team that I'm asking to go, 11-7 in their next 18 or 12-6 in their next 18. So that would be kind of some of the quick math there. But they for sure have to play well above the pace that they are right now.
Okay, so it's impossible. It is doable.
It's doable,
It's going to be really, really challenging, and they're going to have to really kick up a notch, maybe several notches of their hitting and of their, obviously, their bullpen. All right, well, thanks for giving that math. And speaking of improbable things, I cease to be amazed. I have to laugh at this stuff or else I'll get really annoyed with Mr. Anthony. And I heard him on your podcast at the end of the show yesterday. So this is a PSA for you, Anthony. And the PSA is this, Anthony. Despite rumors of an early demise of the Auburn basketball program, they're still alive and they're still viable. And gee, I don't know why, Mr. Ryan LaVoy, I guess that Mr. Kessler would like to just come down and fool around with this program, right?
Right. I mean, I think that Anthony just assuming that Auburn's going to be under probation next year is a bit much. That's a serious penalty, and Auburn has already self-induced one of those. So I can't know for sure what the NCAA is thinking, but Walker Kessler's not the first guy to transfer into Auburn. And originally when a couple guys hit the transfer portal for Auburn, we were thinking it might be bad news for maybe being on probation again next year. But, I mean, there's just no way to know if Auburn's going to be in any further problems with that. So, I just don't see it. And I certainly think they would have been open with Walker Kessler if they really thought that they would have gotten under another penalty.
I think they would have been open with Walker Kessler. They would have been open with Jabari Smith
right.
coming
mm-hmm.
in. They would have been open with Trey. They would have been open with all of these other guys. If there was any indication that, yes, look, we're still under the gun here and the NCAA may come down on us, unless they're just lying to the kids. You hope that's not the case. But in happiness or looking through orange and blue glasses, you would hope that Bruce Pearl and that staff would be honest with these guys and let them know that, yes, there is a chance that you may not be able to be in the postseason.
Yeah, well, I have to laugh at Anthony's continuing, to hope that, somehow there will be some catastrophic demise of Bruce Pearl and the basketball program at Auburn. But having said, I would think, don't they have bigger fish to fry right now from the NCAA's viewpoint in basketball programs like, Arizona,
LSU.
Will Wade at LSU.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they go after them first before they come after us or anything?
I don't know that they would. I don't know that they would necessarily do that. But as far as bigger fish to fry, maybe because some of the other stuff that these teams are being accused of were a lot more egregious than what Auburn did. Now that's not saying what Auburn did
exactly
was
good.
I
mean, we weren't having kids, being bought to stay at Auburn, come to Auburn. They were being bought by Chuck Person to leave Auburn.
Right. Well, to sign with a particular agent. But some of these other schools involved with the Nike scandal and things like that. I mean, yeah, that was trying to get high school kids to come to the school, paying them money or through Nike or however it was. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a lot bigger deal than the coach trying to steer two players to a particular agent. Again, not good, but not on the same. To me, is not the same level of infraction that it would have been with some of these other schools. So that's not to say that the NCAA is still not going to hammer Auburn with something, but we're hoping that with Auburn doing their own punishments, that will at least kind of allow the NCAA to back off some.
And to just briefly go back to what you said, Ron, surely our compliance people would be alerted to anything coming down and let Bruce Pearl's coaching staff know, right?
It's clear nothing's been levied against Auburn right now. I mean, I don't know if that will change, but at the moment, Auburn is normal proceedings for 2021-2022.
All right. So the softball team did a good job last night as well.
Yep, pitched a shutout, and then on to Georgia State tonight.
So Georgia State, we got to be honest, it was Alabama State last night, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
I saw there's nothing to write home about their record. I think they were, what was it, something in 29, 4-29? What was it, their record?
They are typically not good. I do not know their record, but they are not usually a bell cow of the SWAC.
So does it bother you that we struggled to score just, four runs? I think it was 4-0, wasn't it?
5-0, but yes.
5-0?
No, it was not a great offensive performance. That's the type of team you usually beat. 15-1, 12-0, 17-0. And I believe Alabama plays them tonight, and you might get to have a direct comparison to what Alabama, who's a top 10 team in softball, does versus what the Auburn offense did. So I don't think that they're incredibly pleased with the effort against Alabama State from the run scoring perspective, but another opportunity to try and do better tonight.
And I still don't know, guys, I know maybe if you can make sense of it, we have some seniors who, as I mentioned, earlier this past week, I think, that saw their stats. They've actually, their hitting averages have regressed from last year. And that I can't make sense of. And then I've read some criticisms from other people, and I don't know how expert they are in softball, but they're saying that Mickey Dean, you know, has made no progress, that he's on the hot seat. Do you guys see him being on the hot seat?
I think he is. I personally think that he's on the hot seat because, again, going back to what I keep talking about with trends, you know, there are certain trends that you keep seeing with this Auburn softball program that you just don't like, and that trend is lack of offense. They're bringing in some great pitchers, and that's what Mickey Dean is good at. So they're doing great with that. But you got to score runs. And like we just mentioned, you only score 5 runs against the team that you ought to mercy rule. Every single time you go out, you ought to mercy rule that team. And you only get 5 runs. This is a trend that is now happening with this softball team that is not going to be successful. If you can't score runs, you will not be successful.
So you'd place these issues on the coaching staff and simply Mickey Dean and not on the players?
Yeah, because I think there's a philosophy that is not being taught. When you're playing softball, to me, and I've seen it with, and it happened with Coach Myers, and it's happened with some of these other teams. When you're playing softball, but you play with a baseball mentality, and when it comes to offense, those are the ones that typically succeed. And they're not doing that. They play softball with the softball mentality, and that is not going to lead you to success. And so, you know, Mickey Dean is going to have to figure out something, whether it be bringing in a new hitting coach or doing something, but it ultimately comes down on his shoulders, and right now he is not being successful with this program.
So real quickly, can we then generalize or not extrapolate that kind of issue going on in the softball to Bo Nix and having a new coaching staff with a new coaching philosophy that he should improve?
You would think, but is this system going to be, because this is a vastly, vastly different system than anything that Bo Nix has ever done, even in high school. So can Bo Nix pick that up? Is he the type of quarterback that can run this type of a system? That's something that we'll just have to see. So, you know, this is not like switching coordinators, but you're still running a Gus Malzahn-style offense. This is a completely overhauled, different everything about what they're going to be doing. And so we'll just have to see how he does with that. Can he improve? Sure, because he's going to open up a lot more options for him than the systems that he had run in the past, especially in the passing game. He's going to have a lot more options.
All right. Hey, guys, I do appreciate always the time that you allow me to rant and ramble. And, again, if I forget what day it is, please do not hesitate to let me know what day it should be. Having said all that, I thank you for your time as always. And I know my time is way up. Listen to your podcast later, and have a safe evening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. For you guys.
Appreciate that phone call, as always, Steve. Just a minute or two before we go to break, and we'll just take a long break and get into our conversation with Ben Golliver of the Washington Post. Just another minute or two before we do that. I think that obviously going back to the softball program there, I think what also hurts is that you had a style with Clint Myers that was offense oriented.
Right. Yep.
And they had the most success they've ever had in their program.
Yeah.
So Mickey Dean is producing tournament teams that do it with all pitching and little to no hitting, but people are frustrated by it because they just saw 7, 8, 9 runs a game from the likes of Casey Cooper mm-hmm. and Emily Carasone and company.
Yeah, I mean, with, like you mentioned, Auburn softball, and you mentioned this, Tom, you've mentioned this a bunch of times, is the pitching's been really great. I mean, Matty Penta was a top 10 recruit overall. I mean, right. Shelby Lowe was Alabama Pitcher of the Year as far as softball is concerned, and Shelby Lowe's been absolutely dynamite this year. She's had an ERA hovering around 1, and Matty Penta's done great. She pitched a no-hitter to start off her Auburn softball career, but the hitting just hasn't been there. I mean, you've had some bright spots, like McKenna Dowell's still a pretty good hitter, but speaking of seniors who have regressed, Justice Perry, I mean, she's been a better hitter than she's shown this year, but the numbers just haven't shown up for her, and she's a player who came back to use that extra year of eligibility to try to better herself this year, but for some reason it just hasn't completely clicked all at once for Justice Perry this year. So some of these offensive players that have had great years in the past, they've just struggled to live up to those same expectations this season.
And seeing that, you know, with that offense, like I say, it goes back to a trend. And I mean, the trend under Mickey Dean, ever since he got here, is no offense. Mm-hmm. This team has not been able to hit the ball since he's ever been here. And that's a problem. And so, you know, and that was the problem with Coach Myers and that whole group is they were offensive minded, but they struggled at times in pitching. Well, and now you've revamped it and you've just completely swapped. And so now you've got great pitching, but now you can't hit the ball. So Auburn needs to figure out some way that they can get the best of both worlds and not just either hitting guru and crap pitching, and now you've got a pitching guru or crap hitting. You need to find that happy medium, because these other teams are going to keep beating your butt every time because they've done it. They've figured it out. They have great pitching. They have great hitting. That combo is going to kick your tail when you've only got one successful thing that you can do.
And the unfortunate thing for the Auburn batted ball sports is that the hitting on the Auburn baseball team is quite good, and the starting pitching's fine. They've had injuries, but then the bullpen, ouch. So it's like if you could combine the best element of softball, best element of baseball, then you'd have some really damn good teams.
And, you know, the frustrating thing with Auburn baseball is there's inconsistencies there even on the offensive side, because there's times where that offense looks great, and then there's times that you're just like, okay, you know, well, what's going on here? Can't buy a hit. And so there's inconsistencies there that bother me with that. But and when you look again at the trend that Auburn has baseball has shown is that, yes, hitting can be good when it's on its own. Starting pitching, pretty darn good. But the trend is once you get out of that starting bullpen, then it kind of like everything is up for grabs and nothing is safe.
We got to go to our first break of hour number one. When we come back, Ben Golliver of the Washington Post will talk to us all things NBA. We'll also ask him about the draft stock of Sharif Cooper and some of those Auburn guys in the NBA. You're listening to Sports Call, Tiger 95.9, sportscallauburn.com.
Follow our Sports Call host, J.J. Jackson, on Twitter by searching @_J.J_Jackson_. And follow the show on Twitter by searching @SportsCallAU.
Hashtag, is that two words?
I'm Jeff Whitaker, Jr., former Auburn Tigers defensive tackle and national champion, and you are listening to Sports Call on Tiger 95.9.
Welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Sports Call live on Tiger 95.9, sportscallauburn.com, and the Sports Call podcast brought to you by Pepsi. We are now pleased to be joined by our Sports Call guest now, Ben Golliver of the Washington Post on our Auburn Bank phone line. Ben has just written a book that will be coming out May the 4th, Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. And Ben, we talked to you during the bubble last year. We're pleased to be having you back on the show now. Talk to us a little bit about this book and why it was important for you to write this book.
Well, I just think 2020 is going to go down as one of the most important years in the history of the NBA, you know, kind of right up there with, like, you know, when Magic's coming to the league in the 80s or the LeBron James era starts in 2003. You have all this stuff going on and off the court with the player protests, with Kobe Bryant's death, with the, you know, the pandemic and the shutdown and everything else. And it all came together in the bubble. You know, I was there for 93 days, up close and personal at basically all the playoff games from the second round on. I was at every single one of them. So I try to tell the entire story of the experience and put it into perspective on why, you know, that salvage attempt to make sure they could save the season will be remembered as such a key turning point for the league and obviously in the career of LeBron James, for him to get another title, his fourth ring. Obviously, that was huge stakes as well. So there's a lot in it. It's my own first-person journey, and I think if anyone was watching on TV and just wanted an inside look, I think this book will provide it.
And, of course, Ben, I mean, us in the sports world, we're very familiar with how we first got introduced to the virus in the sports world, and it's through the NBA. They were the first ones to have to postpone games that night with the Utah Jazz. And so it feels like, correct me if I'm wrong here, it feels like the NBA trying to get through that and come back to a way of playing was almost like a signal that not things are normal, because, of course, they're not normal, but that there's a big effort going on, that it's really important to try to get the product back on the court.
Oh, 100%. And I talk about the NBA's efforts, you know, coming after the shutdown. I do have a long interview with Rudy Gobert himself once he was in the bubble and had some time to reflect on his positive test. And, of course, all the criticism that he took for his behavior before that positive test, you know, touching the microphones and sort of making light of a virus that a lot of us didn't know a lot about, you know, back more than a year ago. So that's all part of the story, too, but there's a lot of basketball in this book as well. We had some amazing storylines, whether it was the Miami Heat kind of shocking the world, whether it was the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, kind of not living up to expectations and having the big boycott right in the middle of the playoffs, whether it was the Lakers and Anthony Davis's drive for his first ring, you know, Denver Nuggets with Jamal Murray kind of popping out of nowhere, you know, kind of being the most bubble player, right, a guy who just absolutely thrived in that environment, had all these amazing scoring explosions. You know, we get into all of it, but you know, I do think a central theme of the book is what you're describing, the pandemic response. This is, you know, a very scary time for the country. Last summer, the NBA proved that if you had enough money and you had enough willpower, you could construct an environment where everybody could live safely. No one tested positive inside the bubble for, you know, the entire time I was there. They didn't have to cancel or postpone a single game for health reasons. And so I think it wound up being a real success story from the NBA side from a business perspective, because it wound up generating about $1 billion in television revenue. And that's no joke for a league, you know, during a pandemic where they can't have a lot of fans in the stands. So I think it's a business story. It's a basketball story. It's a health story. And it's a social justice story as well, all rolled into one.
We're talking to Ben Golliver, The Washington Post, his book coming out May the 4th. Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. And Ben's been a busy guy, because he also just released this talking about Kevin Durant analysis. More talent, fewer questions. Kevin Durant's Nets are worthy title favorites. Ben, talking about these Brooklyn Nets and talking about Kevin Durant, how good he's been just in the couple games he's been back. I mean, this team has all the talent in the world. I don't know. What stops them from achieving the ultimate goal this year?
Well, I think their biggest weakness is still inside, right? You know, they've made a lot of moves with their front line. They went out and grabbed Blake Griffin. They went out and got LaMarcus Aldridge. And they've actually had a really nice breakout from their second-year center, Nicholas Claxton, who's, you know, not kind of a big name like those other guys, but he's given them really good minutes. So when you came into the season, you looked at Brooklyn and said, well, DeAndre Jordan, you know, he's kind of past his prime. Maybe, you know, he's not going to be good enough to hold up. Now they've got themselves three or four different options that they can play in the middle. But still the question is, are they going to be able to match up properly with a player like a Joel Embiid or, you know, a front line like the Lakers with Andre Drummond and Anthony Davis and LeBron James if those teams meet in the finals? I think those are the biggest questions. But, you know, past that, they've got everything else covered. Their offense is basically the best we've ever seen in the NBA from an explosiveness standpoint. And that's even though they've got guys coming in and out of the lineup constantly. They've got three players who are incredible isolation scorers in KD, Harden, and Kyrie Irving. Those guys have really meshed from a personality standpoint excellently. They haven't been fighting for control of the ball. There's really been no tug of war for those Brooklyn Nets. And they've got great role players, too. You know, Bruce Brown gives them awesome minutes as a glue guy. They've got an awesome shooter in Joe Harris, who's just been red hot all season long, great floor spacer. And, you know, they're even getting good minutes from veterans like Jeff Green, who just kind of pop in and give them some helpful spurts. And you know, it's just so much easier when you're playing with very talented guys, because your job gets to be a lot simpler. And that's really been the story for these Brooklyn Nets. So, you know, to me, they're the favorites coming out of the East for sure. You know, it's been some tough times here over the last couple of days, though. I mean, they got ran off the court by the Lakers. They really just didn't show up. And then they're sitting a bunch of guys for tonight's game against Philadelphia just for rest purposes. So I think it's going to be a playoffs where a lot of these teams that have dealt with injuries during the regular season are almost going to rip off the suit, and they're going to have that Superman outfit underneath. I think that's going to be the case for the Nets, the Lakers, and some other teams as well, where they've just been biding their time until we get to May when the games really count.
And Ben, speaking of the Philadelphia 76ers, they currently are tied for first in the Eastern Conference, and it just feels like they finally might have it all together as far as Joel Embiid realizing his potential as the best big man in the league, and Doc Rivers now being at the helm instead of Brett Brown. So do you think their success this season is attributed to Doc Rivers stepping in and being the coach, or is it Embiid finally realizing his potential, or is it a combination of both, or something else perhaps?
Well, I would have another explanation. I would say addition by subtraction with Al Horford. You know, it just, that was the big hiccup with their lineups last year, is he just really couldn't play with Embiid. They didn't have enough spacing. The defense wasn't good enough when those two guys were on the court together to kind of make up for the offensive compromises, and they couldn't keep everybody happy. Once they took Horford out of there, Tobias Harris's role made a lot more sense. He's had a really strong season. They've been able to keep Ben Simmons healthy, which is always a big X factor as well. And I just think it was good for their vibe. You know, it just kind of gave clearer roles and clearer identities for everybody on that group. They still have some holes, though. You know, they're not a good three-point shooting team. Their offense is only average. Their defense is excellent, absolutely, and it starts with their two stars. But I do think if Tobias Harris can be picked on defensively, he's a possible potential, playoff liability in that spot. And so, you know, they've had a really dream season outside of Embiid's injury. Everything has just been smooth going for them. But they still have some questions to answer. Can they keep pace offensively with Milwaukee and Brooklyn if they don't really get good three-point shooting from guys like Harris and Danny Green? To me, that's kind of the open question. That's what could hold them back. But otherwise, it's certainly a better vibe, better chemistry, better happiness, continuity, all that kind of stuff compared to last year. And it was just time for them to move on. I think the Brett Brown era ran its course. It was time for a new voice. And Doc Rivers has done a nice job there. He's probably not getting a ton of Coach of the Year mentions right now. I think guys like Quinn Snyder, Monty Williams out in the Western Conference have gotten a little bit more love just because maybe their success has been a bit more surprising. They're doing it with a little bit less name talent. But I think Doc Rivers should be in the conversation too.
Ben, when we look out west and we have the reigning champion Lakers with their two most significant players, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, been out for a while, especially Anthony Davis. LeBron having really just the only second significant injury of his entire career. What is your level of concern for them? And then kind of based off of that, what do you see the chances are for the Clippers, who look a lot better this year than the Jazz, who have been surprisingly good all season long?
Well, I would say my concern level is less now that, you know, Jamal Murray went down for Denver, because, you know, they were going to be in a situation maybe where the Lakers, and it could still happen, you know, Lakers and Nuggets play in the first round 4 or 5. That matchup looks a lot better for the Lakers without Murray, because now you can just double Jokic and really, you know, aggressively defend him and kind of let their other role players try to beat you. And I don't think that they've got the point guard talent behind Murray to compensate for his absence. And so, you know, Denver was looming as a major threat to the defending champions, and I think they've really come back to earth. There's also a scenario now where, you know, the Lakers have been without LeBron and Anthony Davis. It was possible they were going to slide back into that play-in round, which would make their life much more difficult. But instead, it seems like they're going to be able to tread water. There's even a possibility they could play Portland in the first round now, 4 or 5, and they absolutely wiped the floor with Portland in last year's playoffs. And so that would be a much easier path to kind of start their playoff journey if they're able to get that matchup, as opposed to the alternative that we were looking at a couple weeks ago. I actually want to give Frank Vogel and, you know, guys like Schroeder, Drummond, a lot of credit for keeping this team afloat during the injuries. They've maintained an excellent defense. Last time I checked, they were number one in the league defensively, even though they've lost both their stars here for the last couple of weeks. They win some games ugly. They definitely lose some games against better competition, but they've been showing a lot of competitive spirit and heart here without their two stars. I think those guys are going to come back rested. They're going to be ready for a late season push, and they're going to be the team to beat in the Western Conference.
And speaking of the Western Conference, Ben, a team that people expected to have pretty solid growth this season was the Phoenix Suns, but nobody expected exponential growth as far as them being a game and a half out of the first seed of the Western Conference. So how impressed have you been with the Phoenix Suns this season?
Very impressed. You know, I definitely was in that camp that was more skeptical, didn't see them having this high of a ceiling, so you're right on the money there. It all goes back to Chris Paul. I mean, look what happens when he gets to places, and then look what happens when he leaves places, right? He gets to the Clippers, they have the best stretch of franchise history, he leaves, they immediately miss the playoffs. He gets to Houston, they have the best season in franchise history, He leaves. They go into a two-year collapse, and now they're one of the worst teams in the Western Conference. He goes to Oklahoma City. They're the biggest surprise of last season. Gets them into the playoffs. He leaves. They immediately go into the tank, and they're going to be one of the worst teams this year. He gets to Phoenix, and immediately they have the best season that they've had in probably 15 years, right? I mean, the impact on winning remains so high from a player like Chris Paul, and I think people get caught up with the fantasy stats numbers, who has the biggest point totals and assist totals and all that, and Chris Paul's box scores don't jump off the page at you, in terms of his numbers, but that guy makes everybody around him better. He knows how to execute late in games. They've been a great team in clutch situations this year, winning close games. Chris Paul is a big reason why, and he's making all their young players' lives easier. A guy like DeAndre Ayton, of course Devin Booker, the all-star guard, but also Mikal Bridges, they've just fit so much more comfortably in what they're asked to do because Chris Paul's out there running the show. I do think that with Phoenix, they've had such great continuity and such great health this year that their record might overstate how good they really are. I think teams like the Clippers, even the Nuggets, and then also, of course, the Lakers are going to be tougher in the playoffs than the Suns just because they've got more top-end all-star level talent. And so I think in that situation, Phoenix could be a possible, first-round upset pick depending on who they draw in the first round. But to me, they're a team that I don't really view them as a traditional contender. Usually we say the two seed in the West, they're going to be title contenders. I'm not sure I'm ready to go that far, but they've had a phenomenal season.
Ben, I'm curious, with us being in Auburn, obviously we're keeping track of Isaac Okoro and Chuma Okeke, and then certainly Sharif Cooper here coming up in this NBA draft, expected to be, late first-round pick or so. What are your thoughts on either of those guys and what you see maybe in the future of Sharif Cooper in the NBA?
Well, I would start with Okoro. I mean, that's exactly what the Cleveland Cavaliers have needed. They need that balancing piece because their guards just want to dribble the ball and shoot the ball. That's all they want to do, right? So they made a very smart decision to bet on his upside, to bet on his physical tools, and to take kind of a longer-term approach with their overall roster build. I mean, they could have gone a different direction, where they were drafting. They could have taken somebody like Obi Toppin, who's a little bit older, more proven scorer. Maybe you plug him in and he gets you some numbers. And, that's they just went the other way with it. And I like that for them because they're just not quite there yet. In terms of Okeke, he's going to have a real opportunity right now, right? I mean, they're asking him to play big minutes because of the midseason moves. And so, we'll see from them. Now, you're probably more familiar with Sharif Cooper than I am. But I think you've got the right range. I mean, obviously, he's coming in decorated as a high school player big time, and then also that continued in the SEC as well. And so, we'll have to kind of see how it shakes out. When I'm looking at this draft class, to me, there's kind of five players that are really difference makers at the top. And the whole question is how much tanking do we see to angle for those top picks? Because you've got teams like Minnesota or Houston that have just had nightmare seasons. And, they're going to be in a situation where if the lottery ping pong balls fall the wrong way, they're going to have to give up their picks to a different team. Like Minnesota would have to give up their pick to Golden State. Houston would have to give up its pick to Oklahoma City. And so they have a lot of motivation here to be as bad as possible during the regular season to make sure they keep their pick and have a chance at a guy like, an Evan Mobley or a Cade Cunningham or a Jalen Suggs, who was so awesome in the NCAA tournament. So, to me, that's really where a lot of the draft intrigue falls this year.
Talking to Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, his book, Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season, coming out May 4th. We posted a link on Twitter, so you can go to Amazon and pre-order that, as I said, coming out May the 4th. Ben, let's get you out of here on this. Give us another pitch for the book, and tell us what you got planned coming up here at the Washington Post.
Well, we're getting ready. The playoff chase is kind of upon us here. We've got about, another month here. That we're kind of counting down, the games until, it really matters. And so I think that's sort of where everybody's attention is on these seeding battles, on the health of the star level players. And, like you mentioned, just trying to, get into some of these contender conversations. How real is Brooklyn, which I wrote about this week? Probably take a look at Philadelphia this weekend as well. And so people can check all that stuff out at WashingtonPost.com/sports.
We appreciate the time, Ben. Good to catch up with you. And we'll hope to catch up again down the line.
All right. Sounds great, man. Take care.
That is Ben Golliver of the Washington Post talking about his book, talking about an article he just done on the Nets, talking about all these things in the NBA A lot going on this time of year. Usually the season would be concluding right about now, but we still got another month or so to go before we hit the postseason. And so good chat there with Ben Golliver on all things NBA, also catching up about the Auburn guys in the NBA. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left until we get to our final break of the hour. So we want to get you to one more segment today that we, or before the hour that we always enjoy. It's time for the birthdays in sports.
It's time for today's birthdays in sports.
Javon, who's on the docket today?
Got some pretty good birthdays here. Star-studded list here on April 14th, 2021. And to start off the list, turning 26 today is Baker Mayfield, quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, 2018 Pro Football Writers Association Rookie of the Year, 27 Heisman Trophy winner at Oklahoma, two-time first-team All-American, and was the number one overall pick of the 2018 NFL Draft. So happy birthday to Baker Mayfield, turning 26, and looks to have found a nice little niche, I'd say, in Cleveland as the Browns made the playoffs this past season and upset the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Browns look to have a really bright future, so happy birthday to Baker Mayfield, turning 26. Turning 22 today is Chase Young, defensive end for the Washington Football Team, was named the 2020 NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year, 2020 Pro Bowler, 2020 Pro Football Writers Association All-Rookie Team, 2019 unanimous All-American at Ohio State, and was the second overall pick of the 2020 NFL Draft. So Chase Young, still really young at 22 years old, part of that really impressive Washington defensive line. Turning 80 today is Pete Rose, former MLB player who played from 1963 until 1986, primarily with the Cincinnati Reds, but also had a couple of years with the Philadelphia Phillies and Montreal Expos, three-time World Series champion, 17-time All-Star, 1973 NL MVP, 1975 World Series MVP, two-time Gold Glove Award winner, and holds the MLB record for most career hits and most career games played. So happy birthday to Pete Rose, turning 80.
Should be in the Hall of Fame.
I was just about to say, we don't have a lot of time to get into it, but should be in the Hall of Fame.
I agree as well. This one hits Braves country. Actually, these last two birthdays hit Braves country. Turning 55 today is Greg Maddux, former MLB.
Mad Dog.
Yep. Former MLB pitcher who played from 1986 until 2008 with the Chicago Cubs, Atlanta Braves, Los Angeles Dodgers, and San Diego Padres. Eight-time All-Star, four-time Cy Young Award winner, 18-time Gold Glove Award winner, 1995 World Series champ with the Braves, four-time MLB ERA leader, won an astounding 355 career games with a 3.16 ERA, inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2014, and is currently the pitching coach at UNLV, so University of Nevada, Las Vegas. So happy birthday to Greg Maddux.
Did not know that. That's a pretty cool pitching coach to have your UNLV.
Yeah.
One of the greatest true pitchers of all time.
For sure. Turning 55 today, Greg Maddux. And last but not least, another Braves birthday. Turning 55 today is David Justice, who played from 1989 until 2002 with the Atlanta Braves, Cleveland Indians, New York Yankees, and Oakland Athletics. Three-time All-Star, two-time World Series champ, 1990 NL Rookie of the Year, two-time Silver Slugger Award winner, and batted a career 279 with 305 home runs. So happy birthday to David Justice and Greg Maddux, both turning 55 here in Braves country.
Wow, that's a special day for Braves country than when those guys were born. But a good day in birthdays in sports. There are a lot of big names right there. And like you said, certainly with Greg Maddux and company, Browns people loving on Baker Mayfield, that's a good day. Birthdays. Those are brought to you, by the way, by the Hive Nutrition Club. End of hour number one. We only have one segment left of the show. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about number nine in the top 25 greatest games for Auburn history in the last 25 years. We'll preview that, and we'll also get you the nightly TV guide brought to you by Coca-Cola. With Javon Cutler, Tom Peavy, I'm Ryan Lavoie. First hour done. We'll be back in a moment.
One hour of our show is in the books.
We've got more to come. Stay tuned for another hour of Sports Call right after the break.
Did you miss any of today's show or want to listen to a segment or interview again? Check out the Sports Call podcast presented by Pepsi anytime, on demand, wherever you get your podcast. From Apple Music to Google Play to Spotify, our podcast is everywhere. Enjoy an ice-cold Pepsi to go along with the hottest sports talk. Thank you for always listening to Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show. Pepsi, that's what I like.
Since 1995, Alabama's sports talk leader, Tiger Communications, proudly presents Sports Call. It's time to join our Sports Call crew as they discuss the latest headlines and happenings around Auburn and the entire sports world. To be part of the show, give us a call at 334-887-3401 locally or toll free at 1-888-9-TIGER-9. We're taking phone calls all show long and want to talk about whatever you've got on your mind. And now, coming to you live from the loveliest village on the plains, Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show, Sports Call.
Hour number two of Sports Call underway, and as yesterday, it will be a short hour number two. Just about 9 or 10 minutes left in the program this afternoon. Ryan Lavoie, Tom Peavy, Javon Cutler with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Once again, Auburn softball will be gracing the airwaves here on Tiger 95.9 starting at 4:45. First pitch just after 5 here on the Auburn Sports Network. J.J. Jackson, who would normally be hosting this show, will be calling that game in Atlanta, Georgia. As there is some rain in the area, but it is light rain. I don't know for a fact that that game will start on time, but they should be able to get it in tonight. Not a whole lot of rain, not a whole lot of heavy rain over there, but just keep an eye on that. In hour number one, had a phone call from retired Ward AM Steve. Also had a great chat with Ben Golliver of the Washington Post. If you missed any of that, the Sports Call podcast is brought to you by Pepsi. If you ever miss Sports Call Live, if you want to hear something again, make sure you go back and listen to our show on demand wherever you get your podcast. Enjoy an ice cold Pepsi to go along with the hottest sports talk, Pepsi. That's what I like. Like I said, just a few minutes left today. We'll get the nightly TV guide done in just a few minutes. But first, we want to unveil number 9 in our countdown, the top 25 best Auburn games in the last 25 years. So let's get ready. Number 9 is 2001, Auburn and Florida. Auburn winning this game 23-20 against the number 1 Gators. We were talking about this during the break. We are young, and not that Tom is old, but he is not as young as us. So he was there at this game.
I was there.
What do you recall from it?
The main thing I recall is Damon Duvall kicking the game-winning field goal. The rest of that game was not very good. It was a very sloppy game, a very not exciting. I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's not really much else from that game that you can remember, but you remember the field goal. And you remember the field goal because it was kind of rainy, sloppy all day. He comes out to kick the game-winning field goal, and right as he was getting set up, Florida called a timeout to try to ice him, and all of a sudden, it really started raining. Like, when he's getting ready to kick it, like, for the first time that night, it really, really started raining, and it was like, oh, that's not good, and got windy. And so Damon Duvall had to kick the field goal, and he had to kick it way to the right and let the wind and just his trajectory, the way he kicked it, bend it back into the middle. And he kicked it, and then the floodgates opened up, fans rushed the field, tore the goalpost down, and an unranked Auburn team knocked off number 1 Florida in Steve Spurrier. And that was a Florida team that was led by quarterback Rex Grossman at the time. They had 2,000-yard receivers with Jabbar Gaffney and Rashay Caldwell. They had a defense that was loaded. I mean, they were legit number 1 team in the country, and then Auburn took them down. And then Florida ended up losing another game after that, I believe, to Tennessee, and didn't even make the SEC championship game that year. But it started with Auburn, unranked Auburn, knocking off number 1 Florida.
So, something about Auburn and field goals against Florida and defeating number 1 Florida, I have to imagine, and Javon, you're the perfect person here to talk about this, because your parents being big Florida Gators, when you told them that, I know the rivalry had kind of diminished because we've adapted this bigger SEC conference than Auburn, Florida, have not played frequently since the early 2000s, it feels like. But Auburn certainly had a few big games over Florida around this time period. The parents don't hold anything against Auburn, do they?
No, they don't. They root for Auburn in their spare time. Of course, they're still number one priority is rooting for Florida in all sports. But since I went to Auburn and graduated from Auburn, they're just like, okay, we'll still accept Auburn as far as a good number two school to root for if they're not playing Florida. So when back in college when I was at Weagle, I was able to cover the Auburn-Florida game down in Ban Hill Griffin Stadium in 2019. So they were just telling me like all the little Florida nuances and what to look out for. So they definitely had some bragging rights that day as Florida beat Auburn. But back then, I'm sure they were quite upset that Florida's season got thwarted by an unranked Auburn team in 2001.
Yeah, no, this game, you know, the winning kick, as you said, Tom, and in pouring rain, too.
44-yard field goal, too.
Which is not short.
That's not a short field. No. And pouring down rain and wind, 44 yards to beat the number one team. So it wasn't like it was a chip shot that you just had to knock through.
Exactly. And not that 20 years ago is so such a long time ago, but certainly kicking in 2001. Now you expect 44-yard field goals under normal circumstances to go in just about all the time. Even in college, a lot of the time, you feel disappointed not making 44-yard field goal. I'd imagine in 20 years ago, you know, you still expect to make most of them, but when you add the element of rain, even for good kickers, that's not a gimme by any means. So impressive field goal there. Auburn likes to do that to Florida. We might have a little bit more on this game later in the week, but certainly wanted to talk a little bit about this because this is one of, if not Steve Spurrier's last teams at Florida. As we said, it's number one. Those guys that you mentioned, Rashe Caldwell, Jabbar Gaffney, Rex Grossman, they might not have had incredible NFL careers, but that's not the point. They're playing the college versions of those guys, and those guys in college were quite good. And so kind of ruined what was going to be another really good Spurrier team right there. And so a big win for Auburn there. 23-20 in 2001, our number nine game in the countdown of our top 25 greatest games in Auburn the last 25 years. Just a couple minutes left in the show, and we know how that ends.
Our show is about to end, but we've got you covered on entertainment for the evening. Here's Sports Call's Nightly TV Guide.
The Nightly TV Guide brought to you by Coca-Cola. And before Javon gets to that, I also want to give a shout-out. I was meaning to do this earlier. So some of that content on the Auburn-Florida game is on our website for you to check out. It's on social media. And our guy Austin Scott is the guy behind it all. He does a wonderful job. Javon, you handle some website stuff as well. And then Austin running our social media. Thank you guys a lot for the work that you do. Austin posting up the link for the book earlier today, super clutch. And so you hear Austin Scott from time to time on our show, but we do appreciate all that he does behind the scenes and on social media for us, doing a lot of great stuff there. Now, Javon, with that, Nightly TV Guide.
And also to give a really quick shout-out to Austin, he's devised this kind of really cool plan. I've seen on Instagram, if you follow us on Sports Call AU at Instagram, he has videos with these posts as well. Like there's a video you could click on Instagram and it'll play like a clip of that Florida Auburn game, and it has the wording that Austin has made as well. So really appreciative of Austin for making us look really great. That's the best way to put it.
MVP. MVP.
Nightly TV Guide time brought to you by Coca-Cola. We've got a couple of interesting sports matchups here tonight. Starting at 5 p.m. Central Time on FS1, we've got some more CONCACAF Champions League soccer action, Toronto FC versus Club Leon. Once again, at the 5 p.m. Central Time start on FS1. So if you're looking for some soccer action here in this afternoon, look no further and check your TV in about 47 minutes or so, and you'll find some Toronto FC Club Leon soccer action. Moving to the links, if you want to, you know, have a golf kick still, LPGA has got you covered with the LOTTE Championship, LOTTE Championship, 6 p.m. Central Time on the Golf Channel. So those who are diehard golf fans and you love watching the LPGA, the LOTTE Championship, 6 p.m. Central Time on the Golf Channel.
I know I was celebrating the Masters as I promptly played a round of golf the very next day. So I'm in a big golf.
It was nice weather. I mean, I don't blame you. And 6:15 p.m. Central Time on ESPN, moving to the hardwood now. The Brooklyn Nets face off against the Philadelphia 76ers. As Ben Golliver mentioned, actually, in the last hour, this matchup is between the two top teams in the Eastern Conference. So Brooklyn at Philadelphia, 6:15 Central Time, ESPN. To the ice now in the NHL, we've got the Colorado Avalanche facing off against the St. Louis Blues, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on NBC Sports Network. So NHL action still going on. They kind of finish around the same time as the NBA usually. So for those who are more into hockey, we've got Colorado at St. Louis, 6:30 p.m. Central Time, NBC Sports Network. And last but not least, more soccer. We've got the Philadelphia Union versus Deportivo Saprissa. That's a 7 p.m. Central Time start on FS1. So after you finish watching Toronto FC versus Club Lyon, check out Philadelphia at versus Deportivo Saprissa, 7 p.m. Central Time on FS1. And with that being said, that concludes the nightly TV guide presented by Coca-Cola.
Did Atlanta United win last night?
They did. They won 1-0.
At least someone in Atlanta did.
And the Hawks won yesterday, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
two out of three teams won.
Well, I was going to say two out of four. And we wanted one of these to happen, but also Georgia Tech losing.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Which that one was much more preferable. I did not mean make it sound like that was a loss in our column. But thank you for that, Javon. And that'll do it for our Wednesday show. Another quick one today. Tomorrow, we will have the full 3-hour show. We'll be back with 3 hours. JJ Jackson will be back as well. Well, we'd like to thank Ben Golliver, The Washington Post, for stopping by and talking to us today. And as always, all of our listeners and callers for your support as well. For Tom Peavy and Javon Cutler, I'm Ryan Lavoie. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Call podcast presented by Pepsi. We hope you enjoyed Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show, Pepsi. That's what I like.